Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pannier, joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Lucco. And this weekend, Kevin and I are happy to welcome back this weekend. I don't know why I said that. But this week, Kevin and I are happy to welcome back the broadcaster for the Lake Country Dockhounds, Dom Sturm. Dom, thanks for coming and joining Kevin and I again this week.
Now, thank you guys for having me. I'm very excited to return to Wisconsin, return to the American Association after year one for me, and have a season underneath my belt. I think that'll help me out a lot.
Well, Dom, let's just talk about that first season with the club. Now going to be a third-year franchise this season, but what was that like for you? First big professional experience job for you, and Kevin and I love listening to you, but what was the experience like for you?
Well, thank you, and it was crazy at the beginning of the season because I graduated on opening day, May 12th, from Arizona State, and I had to drive all the way up to Wisconsin. So I missed the opening series against the Milwaukee Milkmen. And Mother Nature helped me out because Sunday got rained out, and we had an off day on Monday before traveling day of to Sioux City on the following Tuesday. So I graduated on Friday. Saturday, I drove to New Mexico. And then the next morning, I woke up in Columbia, Missouri. And then I woke up in Oconomowoc at 4 a.m. and I was on the bus to go to Sioux City. So it was a crazy first week. I didn't get to meet anyone in the organization outside of the people who were going on the bus to Sioux City and then Winnipeg. And I didn't get to meet all the players leading into the season. I wasn't there for spring training or anything. So I was learning everything on the fly. And then after the first week, we have a managerial change. So it was hectic for me in my first year and first week professionally. Then I really was able to settle in, and I felt like I really became comfortable in Lake Country, Wisconsin. A lot of the fans appreciated how I broadcasted the games, which was awesome. The players enjoyed going back and listening to their highlights, and their families seemed to enjoy listening to what I had to say about them. So overall, it was an incredibly positive experience, and that has me thrilled to go back for this 2024 season.
That had to be pretty crazy on the drive up where I have to imagine every morning you had to wake up and kind of look at the name on the phone in your hotel room just to figure out what town you're in.
Yeah, I stayed in Tucumcari, New Mexico. Never would have thought I would be staying there. I had a friend in Columbia, so he went to the University of Missouri, so that was fine. But my check engine light on my car turned on in New Mexico, and I had no choice but to continue driving. And the car was fine. It's still running now. But it was definitely hectic getting up there.
Well, when you come into there and fans are listening to you for the first time, you had an intern with you last season that began the year, and he was the guy broadcasting for the first few games. And so What kinds of things did you try to establish in those first broadcasts to really set yourself as what the tone was going to be like for fans that listen to your games?
Well, Sam and I, we felt like we did a good job broadcasting and being fair to both our team and the opposing team. The other team, they can go back and listen to your broadcast just as anyone else can. So we wanted to be fair, but we wanted to make sure that the fans and the families and the players could feel the energy of our broadcast. Baseball is entertainment. It's supposed to be exciting, but we also have to find a way to maintain the excitement and make sure it's appropriate. That way it's fitting for the moment. So we wanted to have some excitement, but we also wanted to inform and really make sure that the people who were tuning in, especially when we were on the road, felt like they were being a part of the team. And that was something that I'd never really had the experience of doing. In the summer ball league that I'd worked with previously, I wasn't representing a team, I was representing the entire league. So Sam and I, we made sure that we got to really know our players. That way the fans could feel like they knew the players. So we tried to entertain and inform, and that's how I think just about everybody should go about their broadcast.
Now, big news out of the league was talking about the fact of the Dockhounds will also be broadcasting on TV locally there this year, joining Kansas City Chicago and Fargo. Tell us a little bit about how that came to fruition and how you feel about being a TV star now as well.
Well, I'm super excited because that's not anything that I've ever done before. I've only done online streaming, whether it be in summer ball on the Pac-12 network, which wasn't actually Pac-12 network. It was the ASU live streams. And then with the Doc Hounds last year, it was exclusively on AABaseball.tv, which is tremendous and no complaints there. But to be on My24 Milwaukee, it's just three games, but I think the franchise and also My24 is hoping that with successful broadcasts this season, we can expand that. I found out with everybody else that the official announcement was actually happening. I had been told that it was in the works by our marketing director in Lake Country, Brian Geezy, and I was thrilled. I don't know why I wouldn't be thrilled to be on network television, so I hope that that can expand Doc Hounds baseball, maybe not just in Lake Country, but also to all of Milwaukee and its suburbs, and more people can see what Doc Hounds baseball is all about, that our level of baseball, it may not be to the caliber of Major League Baseball, but it's just as entertaining. These guys can throw in the upper 90s. They have good breaking balls. They can hit the ball over 400 feet. They can steal bases. It's a great quality of baseball in the American Association, and maybe if they're just flipping through the TV channels and they happen to stumble upon our baseball game and say, ah, well, let's watch some baseball tonight, and say, oh, a Doc Hounds game? I didn't know these guys existed. Oh, these tickets, they aren't unreasonable like Major League Baseball prices are. Let's take in a game sometime, or let's find out how we can watch these games more. I think it's only a positive thing for our franchise and also for My24 and the American Association.
Now, will there just be select games on, or will the whole home season be available?
It's just three games. I'm not sure on all of the dates. I read the announcement, but the first game that will be on My24 is June 1st against the Kane County Cougars, which is, of course, an interesting game in our league because Kane County doesn't travel their terrific broadcast crew. So for those games, we're the only people who broadcast that. Last season with Sam and I. This season it will be with my partner Maddox. But it's an opportunity for us to grow Doc Hounds baseball, even if it's only for three games, just get more eyes on the team so more people can become aware of what we are and who we are.
Now, I know they didn't show the other two games that you guys are broadcasting, but when I saw Kane County, I had to say I was a little surprised it wasn't Milwaukee that they were having you guys play against. I thought that would have seemed like a natural fit. Are you disappointed by that, or see Kane County as like a good fit for the game?
It didn't move me either way who the opponent was going to be. I think the message to our squad this year is going to be no matter who the opponent is, we're going to have to show up and play our best baseball, because for a little bit, our team was giving Milwaukee a good run for their money, and that series at the beginning of August took 3 of 4, and then to close the season at home took 2 of 3. But there was also that series towards the end when that losing streak started where the Milkmen outclassed the Doc Hounds, beat them handedly, and never trailed in all three games. So I don't think the opponent was really going to play into it, and you may also think that some people in Milwaukee County are aware of the Milwaukee Milkmen, so televising their games may not be as influential in gaining more eyes, but I was not a part of the decision-making team to decide which Saturday games were going to be broadcasted, but I don't think it really matters who the opponent is for those games. I think it's all about just getting eyes on the team and hopefully growing our audience.
Now let's talk a little bit about the move last year. Dom, you mentioned that, you know, you come in there and all of a sudden, you know, you're out on the road and then you come back and the club decides to make a managerial shift. I love Jim Bennett. I'm just going to say up front, a great guy, sad to see him go, but it did clearly appear that the team responded to Ken. So talk about a little bit about what's that like for you as a broadcaster when you see a move go on like that, and how did you see the team respond being right there and Lake Country?
Well, Jim was very nice to me in the first week that I was with the team. He was helping me out, showing me what he was going to need in terms of stat packs and game notes and whatnot. So I have nothing but nice things to say about Jim. But the team definitely improved once Ken Huckabee took over. And it wasn't only that. I think the talent level on the team increased as the season went along, and I think that also happened to contribute to more of the winning in addition to Huck. The two could not have managed the team, I think, any differently. Huck was more of a open clubhouse, open door in terms of his managerial office. He would go in there and talk with them a little bit more. He let the players be themselves, I think, a little bit more, and that's not to say that Jim was running the team improperly, but it felt like the players who stuck around after that first week felt like they could be more themselves, and that really allowed them to play to their full potential, or at least as close to their full potential as possible, because just about all of their offensive numbers, especially power-wise, started to go up, and the winning started. But the team also got more talented as the season went along, and Ken has a ton of experience coaching both internationally but also in affiliate ball. So he had different connections than Jim that allowed us to get other players that we previously may not have had connections to. And, of course, there are some players that Jim had connection to that Huck did not have connection to. But it felt like this talent level on the team started to go up. And Tom told me that it was by design, that at some point the team was going to get better, and our team was able to add on to the team later in the season because we weren't at that cap. Talent-wise, we're not going to fully get into that today, but the talent on the team today is significantly better than the talent that was on the team a year ago, and that has our front office and our fan base very excited for year three of baseball in Lake Country.
How do you build a relationship with Ken coming in? Because he's, you know, trying to get himself positioned to get the respect of the club and figure out what's going on in American Association Baseball. But, you know, you're the broadcaster and trying to build a relationship with him so that you can talk about, you know, the team and share stories that you're hearing. So what does that relationship look like, and how do you build that?
Well, it was a fascinating relationship that Ken and I have. And same with Jim. I have nothing but great things to say about Huck. He was very accompanying to me. And the first thing I said to him, because I was still figuring out what to do, is my first homestand as the home broadcaster. And it was, hey, what do you need from me so that you have all the information so that you can execute everything? And I think that establishing that professional relationship at the beginning let him know that I'm here for the team, but I'm also here to be here, and I want to help out. And in return, I hope that I can get the respect from you that allows me to just walk into the clubhouse and talk with the players, or to walk into your office and talk about, hey, why'd you go to this pitcher in this spot? Or, hey, this player got an off day. What did you see that wanted you to give him the off day? Or what made you change up the rotation? Or what do you see in this player that made you want to add him to our roster? So they appreciated that I was upfront about knowing that I also have a responsibility to help out the team on a stat pack front, a media notes front, and that in return, or just being a part of the job, that they would help me out with the information that I was seeking to help make the broadcasts better.
Now, when you have a managerial change, sometimes that can make fans a bit apprehensive about what's going on with the club. But, boy, this Lake Country fan base was really something special. I know it had to be exciting for you to broadcast, not only on the air knowing you had a lot of great fans, but a very knowledgeable fan base about your team.
It was awesome to broadcast games at Wisconsin Brewing Company Park last year. And the final record was not what the team wanted at 46-54. But at home, the team had a 27-23 record, and it was because the team was playing in front of good-sized crowds. 1,858 was the final season average. On the weekends, the team was getting well over 2,000 fans. on those Saturday moved up start times, those afternoon Sunday games, the Friday games. And there's a lot to do up in Lake Country, Wisconsin in the summer. Like, there, you can go out and you can enjoy a great day on the lake. You can go fishing. You can go up north, is what they always said during the summertime in Wisconsin. And I'm like, what is going up north mean? Because, of course, I'm from Southern California. I went to school in Arizona. I'm fully new to Wisconsin. They're like, oh, we just go up and hang out on the lakes and go hunting. And for the fans to make Dachshunds baseball a part of their weekends meant a lot to the team. And they tried to show up and play well for them. And that is well represented by that home record, which it started off down below 500. You lose the first two games of the season at home, and then you go on the road, and then you lose the first couple of series after that when you have the managerial change. But the team clawed and they fought back, and word got out that the Lake Country Dachshunds aren't just this team that's trying to make its way, that we're a legit franchise and that fans should go out to our games, have fun, and enjoy some good baseball. And the team responded to that. So I'm glad that you recognize that our fan base really showed up last year, and it shows in the attendance numbers, and it's going to show again this year. And I think the team is hoping that we can have over 2,000 fans per game, and that includes the weekdays where you're going to expect less fans. There's going to be a lot of really cool promotions that the team is offering, and we hope that everyone in Lake Country can make it out to a Dachshunds game, because Wisconsin Brewing Company Park is a great yard. It's very intimate. You can't really be sitting that far away unless you're in one of the suites down the right field line in our pontoon boats, or in the beach beyond the right field wall. So anything that a fan could want to do at a baseball game, they can get that with the Lake Country Dachshunds.
Now, a lot of the fans that listen to the show are fans that are likely to travel, and, you know, maybe a good portion have been to Wisconsin Brewing Company Park. But if you could, and I know it's hard for you because I know you're doing your own thing, getting ready for ball games and ready to make the call to action, but are there any little quirks or little traditions or anything that has built up in the fan base in the two seasons of the Dachshunds that fans should look for when they go to games?
Well, there are certain in-game promotions that we do every single time. Skipper Dave likes to have fun and toss beers out to the fans that are of age during the Drink Wisconsin seventh inning stretch. The fans, they go out and they get more than a ball game, and that's really true across the American Association. Was really impressed by the in-game entertainment that everybody puts on in the league, not only just at Wisconsin Brewing Company Park, but this opportunity for older fans in their 20s, their 30s, or even older to participate in the in-game promotions out on the field. And there's also opportunities for their kids to feel involved with the ball club. And that's not something that you can get at a Major League Baseball game every single time. So it's an opportunity for these fans to feel closer and connected to these professional athletes. I like that we sing the seventh inning stretch and take me out to the ball game. And then we have a jump around in the eighth inning is typically what was played. I got our DJ Dan to play the YMCA at least once a game because the fans love the YMCA no matter where they are. It gets the fans fired up, and you know everybody can participate in that. So traditions fully I haven't noticed. Saturday home games, we had Jax Groshans perform his music on the guitar to our fans after the game. He was traded to the Cleveland Railroaders this season, so I don't know if there's going to be something on Saturday games to encourage fans to stay through the game's entirety and also feel closer to the team post-game, but that was something that the fans really responded to last year as well. The front office is really open to hearing what the fans want, and if it's a worthwhile consideration, they'll think about adding it to the team.
So you're saying you're not ready to take on the job of having the post-game concerts on Saturdays?
I could get up and sing some karaoke songs, Part of my job is using my voice. But, you know, if that's what the team needs, I'll step up. I don't need to get some Lake Louie Brewing beers to get up there and start singing. I love singing karaoke with my friends. There's a couple instances on the road last year where I was hanging out with some of the players and I was singing karaoke at the bar, and they really enjoyed that. It makes them see me as a person and not just this broadcaster, and that was part of the reason I was able to establish some good rapport, because I was just myself.
You know, I know someone on this podcast that used to be in a band. Maybe he could make a couple of appearances on Saturdays and do a set or two. Rob?
By all means.
That was a long time ago, Kev. But
it's like riding a bike, Rob.
What's the go-to song for Dom in the karaoke?
Oh, well, I love to sing Bruno Mars because I think his songs are super easy to sing. And I like to try and sing them like Bruno Mars. You'd have to ask the audience how I actually do at that. But a song that I recently started to sing is We Are Young. And the bar really gets behind that song because everybody knows the words. It's super easy to sing. And it allows the older crowd that happens to be there to feel young. I believe it's by Fun.
I like it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about last season with us now. So as you talked about, the club added a lot of key players as the season moved along. And two that I just want to ask you about in particular, because just the types of season they had. Curtis Terry was 16 homers in 43 games. I mean, that's an incredible pace you're talking about. Guy would have blown away the American Association record in a full season. But Merrick, and I hope I'm saying this right, Chalup, is that the way that's said?
So it's incredible because it's Mark Kloop.
I feel bad now.
No, it's all right. Okay. Oops, there it is. But I always go to the player because my job at its core is to get the player's name right. Because if I say it right, then everybody's going to repeat what I say. And so I went up and I'd been hearing about, oh, this Czech player. We're interested in getting this Czech player, but he's got to go undrafted. So that way, in case a major league team does want him, that the Dachshunds and the American Association do get the player fee, the transfer fee. But everybody was like, oh, I think it's like Merrick or Mark. And I go up and I introduce myself. And I'm like, how do you say your name? And he says, Mark Kloop. And I'm like, it's Mark Kloop. And he's like, Mark Kloop. It's that easy. And so I, of course, then go write out the phonetic on our roster and I give it to our public address announcer, Dennis. And he looks at me and he says, Dom, it's Mark Kloop. It's this easy? I said, yeah, it's this easy. And then I had someone within the organization come to me and say, you're pronouncing Merrick's name wrong. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I went and asked him yesterday how to say his name. And so then I'm going to do my due diligence because maybe he misspoke, was nervous or something. And I go, Mark, it's Mark Kloop, right? And he goes, Mark Kloop. His English, it's not his natural language. So it was funny. He just looks at me and goes, Mark Kloop. And Mark's a great guy. I got to stay with him when we were traveling down to Cleveland for 6 days. But it looks so much harder than it actually is. It's just Mark Kloop.
Well, he has 325 in 34 games, 9 homers, 25 runs driven in. These guys were just great additions and added a lot of pop to that lineup. As you look back on the offense of the season, I mean, yeah, I've just been loving the amount of runs you guys were scoring.
Yes, and the team was playing at Wisconsin Brewing Company Park, which is only 370 feet to left center. So hitter-friendly ballpark with a ton of talented hitters. The games were incredibly fun to broadcast, and I couldn't have asked for a better team to work for in year one. They were thrilling, and to see what Mark Kloop did in his rookie season was remarkable. We saw what he did in the World Baseball Classic, getting 4 hits on Team Czech Republic, including a double off of Japanese pitcher Roki Sasaki, who's going to sign this offseason with some Major League Baseball team and make over $200 million for him to get a double off him on a 100-mile-an-hour fastball on the inner half of the plate, that was one of the first highlights I saw about Mark that made me say, wow, this kid can probably do something. And then you look at his stats at North Greenville, which is one of the best Division II schools in the United States, and then you saw what he did in his first month professionally. It was remarkable. And what he was able to do more as the month went along was start to lay off the breaking balls and work walks, and he swung and missed less. The strikeouts were still there a little bit, and I think that's something that if he has really eliminated this offseason and going into this year, he may not be a dot count for very long, because this kid, 6'4", 220, is incredibly built, is a freak athlete. He's the real deal, and if he is playing the entire year in the American Association, don't be surprised if he's the league's most valuable player.
Any chance Curtis Terry coming back this season that you know of at this point? Can you give us the inside scoop on that one?
I don't have any intel on that. I would assume that if he hasn't signed by now, he's probably not coming back. But I've just been letting the coaching staff as well as Tom Kalanick do their own thing with building the roster. When we sign players, which there was just a player signing right now, left-handed pitcher Zachary King, and the team could certainly use some left-handed pitching because the only left-handed starter or reliever on the team right now is Brady Keis. But you know, then I look at the players and see what they've done and look them up on the internet and see if I can find what their pitches are. I have a couple of questions, and I'll get to know these players in the coming weeks when I head up to Wisconsin, but I don't have any intel. I would love to have Curtis Terry back on the Dockhounds because, as you mentioned, he was on a terrific home run pace. Marcus Chu is the Dockhounds' all-time home run leader at 18, and that took him 97 games to get to this past season, and he signed to play in the Mexican League south of the border. But Terry, in 43 games, hit 16 home runs. He was incredible to watch. And he didn't hit a home run in his final week despite playing in every single game. He's a major league bat. He got called up to the big leagues. And you don't see those bats come around this league all that often, too far outside of their time getting called up to the show. So anytime a hitter like him comes in the league, you may not see him put up those home run numbers, but he was a force to be reckoned with. And he certainly got the respect from opposing pitchers. They were throwing him a lot of pitches in off the plate, because you also look, he was hit by 6 pitches last season. They were trying to make sure he couldn't get those hands extended. It didn't work.
How excited are you looking forward to Josh Altman and calling games with him in the lineup this season?
Quite. A terrific player, and by all accounts, an even better person. Got to talk to Josh a little bit this offseason, and the team was super excited that they were able to get the opportunity to get a player who has the track record that Josh has. He's comfortable in this league. He's even more comfortable, not that he was uncomfortable in Lincoln, but he's an Illinois guy. Illinois is right down the road from Wisconsin. So, very excited. And he's also an incredible defender. I don't think people realize how good of a defender Josh Altman is. And he can play anywhere in the infield, not just shortstop, but at the corners as well as on second base. So he's an incredible player, really looking forward to watching him go to work day in and day out. And one of my favorite parts about the job is watching these guys take batting practice on the field and also get their work done in the cages and just seeing how natural all their swings are. It's impressive to me. It's how I can really, I don't want to say examine their swing, but also see where the power of all their swings are coming from, and that allows me to realize what types of pitches they hit well. So when I see these pitchers for the first time, I could anticipate a little bit, all right, he gets his hands inside, so maybe he won't get beat by the fastball as much as maybe some other players on the team, or hey, he does a really good job of staying back on the ball and going the other way, so a pitcher with some good off speed, he might hit the ball better than the other guys on the team. So it's stuff like that that I really enjoy, and I can't wait to do the same with Josh Altman and the rest of the Dockhounds this season at Wisconsin Brewing Company Park.
You mentioned earlier left center field, 370 feet. Do we see 30 home runs this season from Josh Altman?
I think he could. He had 26 last year, and now like Chicago's a hitter-friendly ballpark. You got those high walls, and they jet out to a very deep center field. So I think it's in the cards. You don't have to hit 30 home runs to have a successful season, and he's an incredibly disciplined hitter. He will take his walk if that's what you're going to give him. He trusts his teammates to drive him in and drive the other runners who may be on while he's at the plate. He's a great teammate from what I've been told by all the broadcasters in Chicago. So I think he can hit 30 home runs, but even if he hits 20 home runs and also has 25 doubles and steals 20 bases like he did last season, the Doc Hounds will absolutely take that.
Tell us a little bit of Dom, new intern for you this season who will be doing games with you. What's the process that you're looking for a person who comes in and is going to be calling games with you on the air?
Super excited to work with Maddox this upcoming season. He's just a freshman at Missouri State University, but he's been broadcasting summer ball in the Kansas City area for the last 3 years. So he's got a decent amount of experience broadcasting games. And that's not something that I had necessarily. I knew how to call a baseball game, and I practiced calling games for years, but I never had the opportunity until after my junior year to sit down and broadcast games on a daily basis. That's something that Maddox has. And he seems like an incredibly bright kid and told me he's willing to do whatever he can to help me out, to help the team out in terms of broadcasts and also with our stat packs and with our game notes. So super excited to work with him. I wanted someone who was going to have an open mind to doing all those things and making the game notes, but also someone who knew how to call a game. And what was neat was I told him, because all of his experience is doing radio, and I think there's two people that you can listen to that do multiple sports that do TV in a minimalist way. And being a minimalist, you don't have to analyze every detail with your broadcast, but you add the details that are necessary and the information that can really enhance the broadcast. I call it crossing the T's and dotting the I's. It's John Sadak, the Cincinnati Reds TV play-by-play broadcaster, and then Ian Eagle, more famously known, of CBS Sports. They don't talk a whole lot. They don't say a whole lot, but that means their words carry extra weight. And so with Maddox, who doesn't have really any TV or not as much TV experience as opposed to radio, I told him, hey, listen to these guys, and when I call you back in a week with the decision, I want to know if you've listened to them. And the first thing he told me was, I listened to Ian Eagle compilations, and I went and listened to him call a couple of football and basketball games, and I really liked what I had to hear, and I look forward to implementing some of that style because it's important not to replicate those guys. But the fact that he did the homework when he's got other more important things going on really stood out to me. And that wasn't part of the reason that we brought him on. I had already made the decision up in my mind, but super excited to work with him. I didn't have any say in bringing Sam on. It was my first year. I shouldn't have had any say in that. And Sam was also my age, so I don't want to say I had like less power over Sam, but I was definitely like, all right, Sam, we're going to work on this more collaboratively, but I'll know what I'm doing so I can guide Maddox and really teach him how we're going to run this entire broadcast, because everything technically, the broadcast-wise, that is done on-site is done by, well, was done by Sam and I, and will be done by Maddox and I. We use Virch and Visua at Lake Country, so if there's a problem, I have to go fix it, and I'm going to have to trust Maddox to broadcast the game, or at least work on broadcasting the game while I'm working on the broadcast. So super excited to work with Maddox, and I'm looking forward to helping him grow as a broadcaster, but also as a journalist.
What? Well, Dom, we appreciate you joining us here tonight, but you know, you're this is your second time, so you know you get to give us a great final thought to close out the show. So whatever you'd like to talk about, the floor is yours.
Well, I want to thank the Doc Hounds front office for trusting me and wanting me to come back to represent them this upcoming season. Year one was, as we alluded to early on, it was a bumpy ride at the beginning, but we really settled in, and I thought we were able to produce a really smooth and informative broadcast for all of our fans. And the front office realized that, and they wanted to have me back, and I wanted to thank them. But I also want to talk about my Padres, because I'm a Padres fan, and I got to work for the Padres this spring in Peoria, and it was really cool because I've never felt more connected to a baseball team, and or Major League Baseball team, I should say, because I was well more connected to the Dockhounds last year than I was to the Padres this year. But whatever you thought about the Padres last year, it's totally different. This team just beat the Brewers, so if there's any Dockhound fans listening to this, take that. Go Padres, and I've really enjoyed going to the games. I'll get one more weekend homestand this upcoming weekend before I head up to Wisconsin and Lake Country. But watch out for the Padres. Just took a series from the Dodgers and the Cubs, so I'm sure there's other American Association fans from Illinois listening. Take that as well. But go Padres. How about that?
Fantastic. Dom Sturm, thanks for joining Kevin and I this week. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Kevin, you know, you and I are always excited to know when a broadcaster is returning and a guy who's a young guy really getting his career going. It looks like Dom has a very bright future there with the Dockhounds and even maybe beyond that.
He does, and I just feel like when you can bring the a voice back for more than one season in, make him truly, you know, the voice of your ball club. I just think it adds a lot more legitimacy to your franchise as opposed to just trotting out interns year after year after year.
Especially a guy who looks like he just loves being where he's at. You know, he's not there just to broadcast a baseball game. He's loving his team. He's loving his community. And it looks like Dom is one of those guys who just says, great area to be in. I like being a California transplant to Wisconsin. So glad to see what he brings to the table.
It's okay to enjoy where you're at and still want to be somewhere else in the end, you know?
Yeah, that's very true. And it's interesting, talking about with him on the air there, Kevin, that Lake Country will be the fourth team in the league to have a TV contract this season with the local network for the area there. So Fargo and Chicago and Kansas City are the other three teams out there. And the first I believe that this happened to was St. Paul had like one of the cable access channels or something in St. Paul in I think 2017 or 2018. But that, you know, that never really seemed to go anywhere else. But now it's gaining traction in some other cities out there, and it's showing that American Association Baseball is really catching fire in some of these local markets.
Well, Rob, I mean, St. Paul was on local public access cable from day one in 1993.
Oh, that's right. You're right. That's right.
And I believe, if I was told right,
they moved to 45?
Oh, there used to be cable access, it would just be in the St. Paul area, KBL. And Anthony LePanto, who does Minnesota Wild Hockey now, he was calling the games back then. Yeah, they bounced around the cable access stations and then got into KSTC and even Fox Sports North picked them up for a little bit. Before that, that Minnesota Sports Channel would do some select games. But I think in the Saints' case, at one time they were paying to have their games on TV. But the payoff in that was, one, you got exposure for your product, and two, it was a selling point to the players where they knew they could play that night, go back to their apartment, and there'd be a replay of their game on TV for them to watch.
Yeah. And that always is something that, well, you know, and clearly there's nothing against wanting to see yourself on TV, but the reality is that's a pretty big deal that you can watch games like that. And so, this is opening a new market to some of these clubs out there that is going to be a drawing factor. And I hope it leads to more of this kind of stuff because American Association Baseball is a lot of fun. And this is just really helping to make the league, you know, another step above anything that we've seen in the past. So pretty excited about it.
And, you know, don't take anything away from AmericanAssociation.tv that keeps getting better every single season. So it's, you know, it's, I believe, unparalleled coverage of Partner League Baseball.
Absolutely. Besides Dom returning to Lake Country, Kevin, we learned out that we're going to have a new Chicago Dogs, sort of new, quote-unquote, broadcaster there this season.
Yes, Aaron Sheeland, who had been working with Sam Brief and even did some road series with the Chicago Dogs, looks like he will be your number one man for Chicago Dogs broadcast in the 2024 season. Got a chance to meet him last year. Great guy. Hope to have him on the show soon. So, very good call by the Dogs.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's going to be just a smart pick. Again, a voice you talked about, just talking about Dom, a voice that fans know. Clearly a person that loves baseball, loves the team. And so, great addition. No doubt about that. I just smart picks out there for sure. So, some smart jams out there, I got to give credit to. Well, let's talk a little bit, Kevin, about what's going on around the league, specifically focusing on transactions here. And we'll start out in Winnipeg, where the team re-signs catcher Kevin Garcia and then adds right-handed pitcher Nick Tregolic Iverson, is, I believe, the way that the last name is said there. We'll drive to Cleburne. The biggest deal out of this, they add infielder Thomas Dillard and right-handed pitcher Dylan Bice, but the re-signing of right-hander Joe Corbett, who was just a complete flamethrower last year, Kevin. The ERA wasn't great. It was around 4 most of the season, but he was right near 2 strikeouts per inning most of the season. The guy just knows how to bring the heat.
Yeah, obviously it's a stat show there. You know, very solid pitcher.
I wonder, I'm not really sure who Pete's leaning towards and closing out games in that bullpen, and I'm not trying to give any speculation on this in any way, but you got to believe that Corbett's going to have a chance. That kind of fireball, if he could take off at least a run from that ERA, he would be a very nasty ninth-inning closer.
Now, Dylan Bice, didn't there used to be a Dylan Tice in the league, too?
I thought he was Kansas City.
Yeah, too bad they didn't ever cross paths. Dylan Tice and then against Dylan Bice.
Yeah, Tice facing off against Bice. That would have been fun for sure. As much fun as when we had Zimmerman's. I know we had Ryan Zimmerman, the broadcaster, talking about Ryan Zimmerman, the pitcher. That was pretty fun, too. So, jumping to Lincoln, Kevin, we see they trade outfielder Nick Ulch, I believe is the way that says, to Ogden. They also signed catcher Logan Williams and re-signed infielder Drew Devine. Devine wound up taking over last season, Kevin, for Josh Altman. Not easy shoes to fill, but, boy, played in 99 games, I believe, for the club and was just a premier shortstop for the club.
Quite a story for him. You know, as a guy that just came in on a tryout, I believe, 1 or 2 years ago, and now he's become a staple in that organization.
Chicago signs catcher Joey Campana and infielder Pavin Parks. They also signed catcher Nick D'Alessandro. That gives them 4 catchers technically on the roster, and I believe most of those guys are going to be fighting to be the backup for Blake Grant Parks, who was quite the catcher there for the Cleburne Railroaders. The Gary South Shore Railcats signed left-handed pitcher Josh Smith. And that is it for them. King County re-signs right-handed pitcher Michael Brewer, adds catcher Simon Reed, and re-signs Jack Fox, who just a couple years in this league, Kevin, has become one of the best young right-handers the league has to offer.
No doubt. I mean, geez, I can remember his first outing. I believe it was 2021, I think, in Sioux Falls. You know, just the rookie guy went out there, threw 5 innings, got through it, and pretty decently, and it's just turned into a good career for him in Partner League Baseball.
I did forget to add that Lincoln also signed right-handed pitcher Walter Borkovich. So that closes out our transactions for this week. Jumping around the rest of independent baseball out on the Frontier League, the biggest news that they had out there was that the Frontier League will induct Bill Lee into the Hall of Fame.
Not the pitcher, but the longtime commissioner.
Wasn't Bill Lee the pitcher, what they call them, like Moon Unit or Bone Man or
Spaceman? Spaceman.
Yes, okay. It was something like that up there. But Bill Lee became the commissioner
for the Savannah Bananas. But no, this one's about Bill Lee, the longtime commissioner of the Frontier League, the guy who helped get the league off the ground back in 1993.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, that's quite a track record. It's surprising that he was not inducted earlier. And I don't know, but is this the Frontier League's first Hall of Fame class? So do I know the answer to that? It must be. Yes, it is.
That would make one of us.
Yeah. So I'm just looking this up. So he's the only inductee this year, which makes me believe that this is the first year. Sort of like the American Association did with Miles Wolf the first season that they had a Hall of Fame. So probably the same idea behind it. We're going to go with that answer. The Gateway Grizzlies signed catcher Kevin Krause, played in the American Association last season. And I believe that was the only American. No, Jalen Miller, infielder Jalen Miller, who I believe played for Kansas City last season.
Yeah.
And right-handed pitcher Connor Gleason, who I believe also played for Kansas City, signed by Ottawa. That is it for former American Association guys. Atlantic League is getting, I think that they are just about to start on their season on the 20th. Their big announcement was that the Stormers completed their coaching staff for the season, as Ross Peoples, who's the manager of the club, added Trayvon Robinson as to his player hitting coach. So he'll be playing for the club and serving as hitting coach this season. So congratulations to Trayvon to get that opportunity. And I don't think that there were any major transactions that had that American Association flavor to it. Ryan Grosjean, that was the one. He signed with High Point after a few great seasons there for the Kansas City Monarchs. I think that closed me out here, Kevin, today. Oh, all right. Jameson McGrain also signed, former Monarch player pitching. Yeah, pitching for High Point again this season. So,
but didn't know he was still at it.
Yes, that kind of shocked me too when I first saw that earlier today. So, congratulations for those guys, you know, and their opportunity to. I hope they continue on with their careers that way. Well, Kevin, that leads us to shout outs, and I know you have a super special one that you're enjoying to talk about tonight.
Yes, you know, I had not really given this much thought, but then I went on X. It just doesn't sound natural. I'm always going to call it Twitter. I found a story from Houston Rockets versus LA Clippers game from yesterday, I would assume. And Rockets, I believe it's center or forward, Boban Marjanovic was at the free throw line, and this game was being played in Los Angeles, and I guess there's a promotion where fans get free chicken if an opposing player misses both free throws in the fourth quarter. Well, Marjanovic missed his first free throw. The entire arena was erupting in cheers in anticipation. And it was like he knew what was going on, looked around, missed his second free throw by a lot, and the entire arena just bursted out in cheers, and Marjanovic kind of like acknowledged the crowd like he knew what was going on. It reminded me in the roundabout way of the scene from Semi-Pro where Jackie Moon didn't want them to get any more baskets, otherwise everybody in the crowd would have won free corn dogs. And, well, they had a center named Vakaitis who didn't understand English very well, and Vakaitis sank a last-second shot to win, as the referee would say, "Corn dogs, Jackie, corn dogs for all these people."
It's a pretty classy thing, too, because, you know, first of all, that was probably tens of thousands of dollars in chicken. that was given away. And you might say, well, it wasn't his money that was spent, but that a player recognized that he could help give fans that extra special day, that's something that the fans are going to remember for a really long time. And the guy just became a local hero, and I think that's pretty cool that he could do that. I like it.
Yeah, it sounds like he's got a reputation of being a pretty happy-go-lucky sort of player, and, you know, in the world of pro sports where everyone's just so dang serious now, and it's almost business-like, it's good to have a moment where you got somebody that can actually be a human on the court and enjoy the game a little bit, even at his own expense.
Absolutely. Kevin, my shout-out is to the fans of the Oakland Athletics, all 62,000 that have shown to the 10 games this season. I have to say, you know, you and I talk a lot about we wish fans had got more involved with their team, and how when a club is really doing well, it's sad to see sometimes when they're not drawing great attendance. But I'm not going to give it to those diehard 62,000 fans, because Oakland in their last season, likely at the Coliseum there in Oakland, which was a great place when I was a kid to go watch games, fantastic stadium, but has really gone to crap over the last probably two decades or something. And the club is moving to Las Vegas. The stadium there, is not going to be ready until 2028, I think is what they were talking about. So they're just going to play somewhere, and they can't find another place for the Athletics to play right at the moment. So they could be back in
Sacramento, is what I'm hearing.
Okay, that may be true. That may be where they wind up playing. But I'm just thinking, not only is it that your team is leaving you, but they could be like dragging it out for, I mean, maybe that doesn't work out. And if it doesn't, well, they might be back in Oakland. But if it does, then this is the last year. But you're still coming out to watch your team who, for the last few years, has lost 100-plus games in each of those seasons. Good for you fans out there. That makes me proud that you're still hanging on for your team despite their betrayal and desire to leave. So good for you fans out. I'm going to pat them on the back for that. Kevin, I think that closes out here for tonight. Did I miss anything we should talk about?
Nothing I can think of. I'm sure we'll think about it long after we've recorded this. And by the time this comes out, I'm sure there'll be a few big trades made. So.
Yes, everybody's waiting to pull the trigger on that for Tuesday morning, just to get at you and I for sure. It always seems that way, though, even if it's not true. But Kevin will be back. Kevin and I will be back next week. We'll be back next season too. But we'll be back next week. Just as a reminder, in a couple of weeks, the American Association will kick off the 2024 season here on May 9th, which, as I'm talking right now, I'm going to do a little math, is 24 days from now when Kevin and I are recording the show. And so we will do our preseason breakdown of each club, looking at talking to the broadcasters and discussing their thoughts on the upcoming season, players that they think are going to have a big impact, great stories that are going on there. And Kevin always has some great individual questions for those broadcasters that are always fun to listen to. So looking forward to that for about 2 weeks from now. So for Kevin Luco, I'm Rob Panier, and we will see you next time on This Week in the Association.